Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
Hey, good morning. It's Sunday, the 15th of November, 2009. This is Solder Smoke 118. I want to start out this morning by pointing out that we're doing a little bit of an experiment before I start. You know, we've been struggling with the sibilant S problem here, and I got a really interesting suggestion from one of the listeners. He came up with what he thinks might be the technical solution to this problem, and we are implementing some new technology this morning. So tell me if anybody notices any differences in the sibilant S situation here. We just want to do a little experiment here without telling you what we're using so that you can let us know if you think that this is of any help. Okay, it's been busy. I've been away, and that's why Solder Smoke is a bit late this time. I think we missed a couple of recording slots. Excuse me. We've been on the road. The kids were off in the first week of November, and we decided to take advantage of, to see some parts of Italy that we hadn't seen before, and we headed north. First, we drove from Rome up to the Pisa area near the Leaning Tower of Pisa. This is about a four-hour drive. Italy has really good highways, I must say, really excellent transportation infrastructure, especially for driving, and we made it up to the Pisa area, got settled, and we started exploring around there. Really beautiful, lots of great things to see in that area near around the port city of Livorno. First, we went to Pisa and saw the iconic Leaning Tower. Man, it is really leaning. You know, we've all seen pictures of it, but we were really struck by how far over that thing is leaning. Elisa especially was really taken by it and surprised at how far over it really is leaning. You know, we first saw it from not from the grounds of the actual site, but from elsewhere in the city. And it's a very almost disorienting thing, because you rarely in life in an urban setting see a building that's not completely vertical. And when you're in Pisa, you look around and all of a sudden, I mean, sticking out literally like a sore thumb is this one building that it's not vertical. And so that was really interesting. The kids got a real kick out of that. Next stop, Cinque Terre, which is a group of five little villages just hanging on the sides of cliffs and really rocky coastline in the region of Liguria near the city of La Spezia. And really, really stunningly beautiful terrain. We had a really beautiful day for it. It's a good hiking adventure. You could hike all five villages. Hike will take you about 5 hours. We did three of the five and had a real nice lunch in one of them. Beautiful little places and, like I said, really stunning terrain. We hit the fortress town of Lucca, but Lucca, the only really bad weather was the day we were there at Lucca. And, you know, old stone and cold rain doesn't mix very well. So we'll have to give Lucca another chance, because it was just pouring down cold rain when we were there, and I don't think we got a fair look at it. Then we, from the Pisa area, we decided to head up all the way up to the far northeast corner of Italy to a region called Friuli Giulia Venezia, and this is an area that Billy had studied in school. Each kid had to study one particular region of Italy, and this was Billy's region, so that was one of the reasons that we wanted to get up there. Again, this was about a 4 or 5 hour ride. We stopped in the city of Verona on the way up. Verona, famous for Romeo and Juliet. And, you know, What a beautiful town. I mean, this is really kind of eye-poppingly beautiful, prosperous city. I understand it's one of the most prosperous cities in Italy, and really nice. And of course, lots of the Romeo and Juliet theme there. We ended up having a having lunch in a really nice Italian restaurant that claims to have been the home of Romeo. It was right around the corner from the home of Juliet and the famous balcony and all that. And I kind of questioned the owner a little bit about how they know that it was the home home of Romeo, who of course did not exist. But anyway, we got into a discussion about that, and it was all a beautiful town. Really liked it. The place that we stayed up in Friuli Giulia Venezia was right near the Alps, right near the Dolomite Mountains. Billy celebrated his 12th birthday while we were up there, and what he wanted to do was play in the snow. So we got a couple of sleds. We drove about a half hour up into the hills above the snow line, and Billy got to go sleigh riding on a completely unused ski slope. The ski season wasn't open yet, so he got to take advantage of that. My wife and my cousin wanted to go see Venice. I had seen Venice several times, so I gallantly decided to stay back with the kids and let the two women go out and explore Venice and see all the things they wanted to see and do all the shopping they wanted to do. And so off they went. And then the following day, we kind of wrapped up the trip with a visit to a really interesting town, Trieste, or Trieste in Italian. And this is the city tucked in on the opposite shore of the Adriatic Sea, across from Venice, right up there, snuggled up against Slovenia. And what an interesting city. Very Italian, of course, but it's also very Austrian and Austro-Hungarian. And as you drive into Trieste, as you look off to the side, you can peer into Slovenia and see the Slavic influence there. So an interesting trip on the road for 8 days. Came back kind of tired, but everybody had a great time, and we're really glad to see the north of Italy a little bit. Lots of radio stuff to report, guys. All kinds of things been going on, not on the trip, but before and after. I've been playing with PSK31. As I mentioned, somebody sent to me an Ubuntu-equipped computer, and there's this program on it called FL Digi, and it stands for Fast and Light Digital Recording. It's I'm looking for something to do one morning here in the shack. Took the audio out from the Drake 2B, plugged it into the sound card of the new computer, fired up FL Digi, and for the first time really started decoding and looking at PSK31 QSOs. This was really interesting. I liked it. It's sort of like, it's not shortwave listening, it's more shortwave watching. You see a little stream coming down the waterfall, you put the cursor on there, and boom, magically the text starts appearing at the top of the screen. I like it. I don't know. I mean, I had tried PSK31 once a few years ago, but didn't really get into it. It seemed more like kind of a slow live form of email to me, and I got quite enough email at work, frankly. But for some reason, this time it really captured my attention. I like the exchanges that were taking place in the QSOs. You know, when they're talking about their rigs, they mention not only the radio part of it, but they also mention their computer. You know, I'm running a Dell computer or whatever, and some of the things that come across the screen. One German ham said very tongue in cheek that quote, "I am created in 1936." And it sort of reminded me of, was sort of HAL-like, you know, on the 2001 movie. But anyway, PSK31 has some possibilities. And this motivated me to, yesterday, well, here's the deal. Yesterday I was sitting in the shack. I had a bit of the flu or something on Wednesday and Thursday. And so I took advantage of my kind of convalescence time here to, at one point when I had, when I wasn't completely wasn't completely horizontal, I did a little bit of cleaning up here in the shack. So the workbench was empty. You guys know what I'm talking about. Kind of an empty workbench is sort of like a blank canvas. You feel like you should do something with it. And so anyway, I recovered. I went back to work on Friday. Yesterday we were sitting around. We didn't go out to the country house. Everybody was tired of being on the road, so we just hung out in Rome yesterday. And I said, man, I feel the need to generate some solder smoke. I should build something here. I started looking around, and then I found it. Hold on. Where is it? Yeah, it's been sitting there. It's been sitting there for, I guess, over a year. And it's from Bruce Connor, WB8OGK, and Tony Parks, KB9YIG. It's the Soft Rock RX-TX version 6.3 kit for the software-defined transceiver, the SDR. I think it's the SDR-40. Anyway, the SoftRock 40 group. And I said, well, I'm going to give it a go. I have never done any kind of surface mount building, but it didn't look too bad. And it, gosh, the capabilities of the little transceiver board seemed perfect. And there was another thing, guys. This has happened to me before. This has happened to me at least two or three times before. You know, when you start a project, you start, in the back of your mind is, okay, well, what am I going to, when I finish the boards, what am I going to put them in? And it just happens that I've had kicking around here in the shack and on the workbench for the last few months a little project box. I think it's an old Radio Shack project box. It's about the size of your fist. It's really too small for any of the kind of rigs that I normally build. It'd be about the right size for a little keyer or some sort of, you know, microphone preamp or something like that. But you know what? It's also the perfect size for the board, for the main board, for the SoftRock transceiver. So I took this as a sign from the radio gods. I took this as a message that I should at this point build the SoftRock SDR RX-TX version 6.3 kit that Tony and Bruce had so kindly sent me so many months ago. Gentlemen, the project is underway. I have soldered my first surface mount capacitors. Let me tell you, the first few were not pretty. I destroyed one with my tweezers. This is not for the faint of heart. And I almost gave up a couple times thinking, man, I just can't even see this stuff, and my hands are shakier than I thought they were, and this is just not for me. But you know what? I hung in there. And, you know, the first few capacitors weren't great, but like everything else, there's a learning curve involved, and I got it done. And I'm now in the process of troubleshooting the power supply sections of the board. I like the way the written materials that are on the website that accompany the project are good, because it's not just stuff the board and see how it works. You could do that if you want, but you know, I think it's kind of risky. They take you through it step by step. They display the schematic so you know what parts you're putting in there, and they stop and they say, okay, now I check the voltages. So I'm getting to that point. I hope to get the power supplies done, and then I hope to continue. It's been a learning experience. One of these little chips, it was so small. I don't think I'd ever seen a component this small, and I had to actually work with the monocle and the magnifying glass. I don't have any really specialized equipment. I kind of rummaged around the shack to find stuff that would be useful for this kind of detailed soldering work, but it's possible to do it. And I managed to get that tiny little chip, all five little pads, onto the board. Okay, so far so good. I had a really good radio day yesterday too. It wasn't just it was kind of a cloudy day in Rome. Everybody was just kind of hanging around the house. My wife and daughter and our my cousin was were out in the kitchen, happily baking cakes, and I was in the shack. And the band conditions yesterday were pretty good. This helps too. I had the Drake 2B tuned to 20 meters, and I don't often hear a lot of U.S. stations, but there was a strong U.S. station coming through. There must have been some sunspots yesterday, but Jerry N8QS was clearly audible through a huge portion of the afternoon yesterday, and it wasn't really a pileup because he's not exactly rare DX. I think he's in Indiana, but I could hear him clearly through most of the afternoon, and most of the European stations I could hear them when they were coming back to him. Now Jerry was running a kilowatt to a six-element quad at about 60 feet, about 20 meters off the ground. So he was a big gun, and I really liked his kind of friendly QSO style. But you guys know what I'm talking about. When you got something going on the bench and you got the radio on, and there's an agreeable person there at the other end having a series of QSOs and talking radio. It was one of those kind of really nice workbench Saturday afternoon experiences. So I thank the guys from the Soft Rock 40 group for sending me that kit. I will probably be cursing you several times in the weeks ahead, but I hope to get this thing together and fire it up and do all the amazing things that I know it's capable of doing. So thanks a lot for that, and I'll keep you guys posted on the new software-defined radio project here. All right, a couple other things to mention here. Let's see what else. Hey, I don't know. Speaking about operating, I guess it was weekend before last or 2 weekends ago. I hope you saw this on the blog. Yours truly here, sitting here in Rome, won the CQ Worldwide DX contest. I know you're surprised. I know you think that I'm not a big gun station here, not in competition. But in my category, you have to be careful now. In my category was homebrew, QRP, double sideband phone stations in a Western Trastevere. Number one, numero uno here, guys. I had a massive point count of 7. I'm not a contester. I'm not going to talk bad about contests, but I'm just going to say it's not my thing. However, I am willing to admit that there are times when contests can be useful, even for somebody running ridiculously low power on double sideband phone like me with severely compromised antenna situation. Because in a contest like the CQ Worldwide DX contest, I found out everybody can benefit from talking to everybody else. So it wasn't one of these deals where I would call somebody and they would bark back, "No, don't want to talk to you. Slovakia only." they were willing to talk to me. Anyway, so I made 7 contacts on 20-meter double sideband with the little rig that you guys have heard far too much about. And I had a little bit of fun with it. So 7 contacts, and like I said, I won in the very narrow category in which I was competing. And I feel good about that. After the contest, I moved the Drake 2B to good old 17 meters and was listening in some QSOs there. Makes me yearn for sunspot, guys. They're coming, I think. And when they do, 17 will come back. So I'm already starting to think about preparing my my rigs for the 17 meters. That was my favorite band during the last solar cycle, and I'm hoping to be back on it during the one that's coming up. All right. We got some publicity here, guys. Solder Smoke, the QRP community, the whole homebrewing world was rocking computer world. I think it was October 26th or October 29th. Excellent article by John Edwards, W6JE, talking about ham radio and the applicability of ham radio in the modern world, what computer guys can do if they get their amateur radio licenses. Excellent article. Check it out. I have links to it on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com blog. Thanks very much, John, for writing a really excellent article. I think you did a great service to ham radio and probably brought a number of new people into the hobby. Speaking of computers, the new version of Ubuntu is out. Karmic Koala has hit the streets. The Karmic Koala upgrade is available. I haven't tried it yet. I did try it, but I couldn't get the... I had some technical difficulties. It's no fault of the software. It's a fault. It's an operator problem. But anyway, I intend to give Karmic Koala a try in a little while, mostly because of the really cool name. I'll admit it. Gentlemen, the other big news in the QRP homebrew world this month, this fall, has to be the Rexpedition. The Rexpedition. I hope you guys have heard about this. If not, you're hopelessly out of touch with QRP and homebrew radio news. We've been talking here on the podcast, and we've had a number of articles on it on the blog about Michael Rainey AA1 TJ's New England Code Talker rig. This is the voice-powered rig that Michael has cooked up in his underground nuclear bomb-proof workshop up there in Vermont. The idea is that you build a transmitter that has no power source, and that the only electrical power is generated by the voice of the operator. So when you speak into the rig not only transforms the audio power from the microphone into electrical power, and then uses that electrical power to generate, in Michael's case, a double sideband signal, and out it goes to the universe. Really fantastic stuff, and very appropriate for a kind of a poetically inclined person like Michael, because he has been quick to pick up on the connections with other kinds of voice-powered communications. At one point, he was calling it the El Silbo, which was based on a kind of mountain-to-mountain language used in the Canary Islands, but lately it's been referred to as the New England Code Talker, because when he operates the rig, he's found that the most effective way to do it is by basically speaking Morse code-sounding utterances into the microphone, and it's perceived on the other end as something that's at least partially recognizable as Morse code. But again, the key factor is that it's all voice power. So can you imagine standing on the shore with this little thing that you built that's in essence sort of a kind of fancy electronic form of an old horn, and then speaking into the horn and having the only power be from your voice, and having that voice go across the Atlantic. That's the dream. This week, I think it was Monday, Tuesday of this week, sent an expedition out to a beach cabin that Rex, W1REX, his uncle has out there on the Maine coast. And Michael was out there. Siab AA1MY was there, and he had his own important QRP DX goals in mind. We'll talk about that in a minute, but they set up antennas. Guys, when the antenna goes over the power line, something is seriously wrong. I was worried about you when I heard about that. Try to keep the kite-borne antennas seriously away from the power lines. Holy cow, that must have been scary. I think I had a dream about that after I read it. That's a no-no. But Michael, it was no joy for the New England Code Talker. Michael's made many contacts with this rig, but didn't cross the pond. But I have faith. I know that he's going to eventually do it. And I think that will be something truly historic. I think that'll be a first for radio, the first a transatlantic QSO using a voice-powered transmitter. We know many of our radio brothers were listening at the other end in the UK and elsewhere. And I know we're going to have another go at it. And I know Michael's going to cross the pond with voice power. SEAB AA1NY achieved his goal. This was apparently a long, long quest to work across the pond on 160 meters with QRP power levels. He wanted to use kite-borne antennas over the beach and over the water. It was rough. Murphy struck, and the first kite broke away and may have crossed the pond on wind power, but they didn't do it. But then they managed to, at 4 o'clock in the morning, apparently, they discovered that winds were favorable, and Michael and Siav got up and put the kite up in the air, and lo and behold, AA1MY was able to work across the pond with QRP power levels for the first time ever. A new record there on 160. So congratulations, AA1MY. A really interesting expedition. It's one of those things where everybody reads about it and says, "Geez, I wish I was there with those guys." And it's all written up, and I have links to the write-ups on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. The best write-up is on W1REX's page with lots of pictures and video links. You can see the New England Code Talker in action. Be sure to check out Rex's the stuff that he's selling. He's the Tuna Tin 2, or the Tuna Tin Man, who's building all these rigs and has all these great kits in tuna tin can form. I really got a kick out of his website. So when you go and take a look at the Rexpedition stuff, be sure to scroll down on the main page and you'll find all the wonderful kits and equipment that he has. I got a kick, having recently been involved in a contest. Rex has available a device with a numeric readout. It's not necessarily digital, but it's a numeric readout that lets you know what report you should give to the other station when you're working a contest. And it fixes right onto the front of your rig, and it gives you the report that you give. It's available, and I thought this was remarkably generous on the part of Rex. It's available absolutely free. And you can put it on your rig, and then it'll give you the readout of what to say to the other station in terms of what is his report during an amateur radio contest. And it's just a sticker. It says 599. All right. Enough contest bashing there. Okay. That's as harsh as we get here at Solder Smoke. Let's see. Some other stuff we have. People send me things. People send me emails and links, and that's really great because that's what keeps Solder Smoke and the blog going. And somebody sent me a great link to something that I didn't know about. I don't think anybody really knew about this. Do you know that in July 1969, when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were walking on the moon, that there was a radio amateur down here on the planet Earth who were using at least partially homebrew equipment, was monitoring directly the communications, the signals emanating from the lunar surface. Wow. Holy cow. That is really good. That is knack to the max, guys. This guy, his name is Larry Basinger. I don't know what his call is, but the articles we read indicated that he was involved in ham radio, so we're going to assume that he's one of the brethren. He built himself a corner reflector. Apparently a quite large corner reflector, and set up the necessary equipment. And when Neil and Buzz were doing their thing down there in the Sea of Tranquility, Larry was back home, I think, in Kentucky. And when he aimed this corner reflector device at the moon, lo and behold, he could hear Neil and Buzz on the lunar surface. And he monitored it directly. He recorded the whole thing. I know. There's those of you out there. There's a few of you out there who are saying, no, he couldn't possibly have happened because they faked the whole thing in Arizona. Okay. Well, we're we're not going to even address that. but anyway, Larry monitored the communications. It was really amazing. And there's a really good series of newspaper articles with pictures, and he's got recordings and everything else. We have this up on blogspot.com, and I think this is a bit of ham radio history that nobody knew about until recently. So there it is. Check it out. I think you guys will really enjoy it, and I think you'll agree that Larry definitely knacked to the max. Congratulations. Hey, Christmas is coming. Christmas time is coming, guys, and Billy and I were out, and we spotted a couple of things in a toy store here that I think all true knack victims and radio amateurs should be interested in. This stuff is, you know, it's all coming from the same factories in China. So if we see it available in stores here, it'll probably be available in the States. One thing that caught my eye is a very simple camera kite kit. It's a little kite, little kind of Delta kite, and it's got mounted on the kite a little digital camera. And they've got the in the string that holds the kite, they've got a couple of wires come down, and in the kind of in the reel for the kite string, they got a little trigger, so you can fire the camera up on the kite. It shoots digital pictures. Now, long-time Solder Smoke listeners will know that I have dabbled in KAP, in kite aerial photography. And you could see reports on my adventures, especially in the Azores, on the gadgeteer.us website. But somebody has made this a whole lot easier, and the results will probably be a whole lot better. I was shooting a 35mm film. This is digital. A lot easier, really neat, kind of a fun thing to do. Get your camera kites for the kids or for yourself or for your spouse, or get your spouse to buy it for you. It should be pretty cool. Another thing that I spotted right next to the camera kite was something that Gene Shepard, our good friend Gene Shepard, was something that he was involved in marketing many, many years ago, and it's the wind-up ornithopter. You guys know what I'm talking about here? This is the little mechanical bird. And it's a little plastic thing. It's got little flappy kind of plastic wings, and you wind it up. It's got a little kind of wind-up device, all powered by a rubber band inside. You wind it up by the tail of the bird, and then when you release it, this thing starts flapping its wings, and if you adjust it properly, it's really wild because it flies around. If it weren't for the color, you'd have, you know, it's kind of bright yellow and stuff. It looks like a weird bright yellow pigeon out there flying around the piazza. So again, this is another good Christmas present. Get your ornithopters. All right. Speaking of Christmas, Christmas is a-coming, and it's time for me to plug Solder Smoke, the book. Guys, on Christmas morning, you're going to wake up, and, you know, do you want to find a whole bunch of socks in there? Do you want to find a whole new set of ties? Do you want to find all this kind of stuff that you always get because you have failed to inform your loved ones about what you truly want? This is the time, gentlemen, to ask for Solder Smoke the book. As a matter of fact, this weekend, the good folks at Lulu.com are running a pre-Christmas sale. So if you put the order in this weekend, you get 15% off. Keep an eye out on the weekends. Lulu, I don't run the sales. Lulu decides on all this stuff. But I noticed that almost every weekend now they have some form of sale. Every holiday they'll have a sale. They had a Veterans Day sale. And now they got this weekend they got a sale running, and what they do is they give you this little code phrase, and this weekend it's Xmas 15, XMAS 15. The details are on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com thing. And anyway, when you're buying it, they'll ask you if you have any special code, and you put that in, and bang, 15% off. So I would recommend the Solder Smoke book would be a good thing for you to find under the Christmas tree. Also, in the same vein, don't forget about the Solder Smoke coffee mug, T-shirt, and Solder Smoke hat site. Wouldn't you like on Christmas morning to find some of these fine fashion accessories under the Christmas tree instead of the standard blue tie and dress socks? Wouldn't you like to have a Solder Smoke hat there? Gentlemen, now is the time to act. It's only 6 weeks till Christmas. So at least forward the website to your wife so that she can place the order for these fine fashion items. And then you could spend the rest of the year embarrassing her by going to the mall with a T-shirt that says, "My other car was homebrewed by with Junk Puck's parts. Watch solder, listen to Solder Smoke." All right, enough of the rampant commercialism here. All right, now it's time for
Solder Smoke mailbag.
I love him.
Indeed.
Yeah, Billy's still sleeping, so we're gonna have to go with the old digital version of the gong. Got a bit of mail here. First, Bill, K2RXQ, sends in some very fine business recipes for cooking cinghiali, cooking the wild boar. We saw some wild boar that had been shot during the hunting season. We saw at least one. And anyway, our cousin who's visiting from the States was out in Umbria a while back and was served some cinghiali in restaurants. Said it was quite good. So anyway, thanks, Bill. We'll file away the cinghiali recipes. I think in our case it would have to be a kind of roadkill cinghiali. We're not bringing any firearms out into the hunting zone. Anyway, Bill also is the first one to use a new acronym here, and it actually caught me off guard. It took me a second to realize what SSTB stands for. He said he really likes SSTB, and of course that's Solder Smoke the book. All right. Eric in Sweden writes in. He says he really likes the podcast. He sent along an article. There was a big article in the Wall Street Journal, and I guess it's been bouncing around the media and the news websites about these kind of hacker common, pooled workshop operations, one called New York City Resistor, where they have a workspace. They're calling them hacker spaces, and they get all together and they help each other build all kinds of zany electronic devices. Related to the NAC, some of it is a little bit too, we've had discussions about this. Some of it, when they just start kind of taking things and modifying them so they make, funny semi-musical noises, I start wondering whether they're truly in the NAC category. But some of the stuff they make is quite ingenious and reveals high levels of electronic understanding. So thanks for sending that along. Erica asks for more information on or more content about software-defined radio. Well, Eric, we're very responsive to our readers, our listeners, and as you see, we've got quite a high level of software-defined radio content this week. David in Ireland, just getting started in radio, hasn't gotten his license yet, but he's working on it, very enthusiastic, and listening to Solder Smoke. And he asked really whether he needed to get a really fancy rig, or whether it would be okay for him to start out with like a Rockmite or a Hendrix direct conversion rig. And I said, man, go for the simple stuff. You'll have a lot of fun. You don't need any of those, any really big, glowing numeral semi-computer $10,000 Yaesu ICOM Kenwood rigs. That's not at all necessary. And a Rockmite or a Hendrix direct conversion rig will probably be far more rewarding, a lot more fun. So I recommend, David, that you go ahead and follow your initial instincts there and get going one of those simple rigs, and we hope to, when some sunspots arise, we hope to work you on the air. Great. Our friend Scott, KD5JNR, was at the Enid, Oklahoma Hamfest, and he managed to find at the Hamfest a NorCal 49er. Congratulations, Scott. Scott was the guy who sent us in the report about the Apollo 11 eavesdropping by OM Larry there. Great. Thanks for sending that along, Scott. John, M0TIF, is a Solder Smoke listener and a pick experimenter. He listens while walking his crazy Jack Russell dog in the Chiltern Hills of England. Thanks for sending that along, John, and I'm glad you're listening. Good luck with the crazy dog, and with the pick experiments. I checked out your website. Very interesting. Thanks for sending it along. Another email from England, Steve, G0FUW, longtime Solder Smoke collaborator. Gentlemen, another important milestone achievement, a longtime goal held by one of our brother NAC victims. Steve has had been on a 25-year mission to build homebrew, a multi-mode, multi-band QRP rig. And he's been working on it, and he was getting to the point where he needed a final, and he was rummaging around, you know, when you get towards the end, you need to put in the final. And he had the thing going at really QRP levels, but he wanted to put out, I think, a few watts. Rummaging around in the shack, looking for parts, looking for something to meet the requirement, you know, as you do. And he found a kit for a power amplifier that his dad had given him in 1993. At the time that his dad gave it to him, he really wasn't that interested and didn't really have much use for it. So he just put it away in the junk box, and it's been sitting there since 1993. And now he remembered it, he found it, and he realized that it was exactly what he needed to, no pun intended, finalize his new transceiver. And it, you know, this is a he uses a phrase that I use in the in Solder Smoke, the book, and that we've used here on the podcast, and that's derived from the title of the great book by Tracy Kidder, Soul in a New Machine. And I said that, you know, by building rigs a certain way, by using parts from old friends, parts from rigs that we used as kids, by having your kids help you build at least part of a rig. Maria helped me paint a power supply inspired by one of Tony Fishpool's articles, and Billy, even as a 3 or 4 year old, helped me wind toroids, and they're in many of the rigs now. Anyway, this is a way of putting that we as radio amateurs put soul in our equipment in a way that just doesn't happen with the store-bought stuff. And Steve noted that including this old PA kit that had been given to him by his dad, who has since passed away, really is a way of putting that kind of soul in the new machine. So congratulations, Steve. Thanks for sharing that story with you and I know with us. And I know that having that power amplifier in there from your dad really does add a lot to your new machine. Good luck with it and congratulations. Michael, WA6ARA, another longtime Solder Smoke friend and collaborator, has also gone digital. Guys, there's something out there. I don't know. A lot of us kind of analog guys are being, for one reason or another, pushed into the digital realm, and Michael is in that group. Christmas 08, he got a new NUE-PSK kit from his wife, but he put it aside and didn't do anything with it, and like me, somehow he got the urge to build it. He's built it, and he's now on PSK in the digital modes, and he's just gone all digi on us, so great, Michael. Thanks for sending that along. Thanks for sharing that. Bill, KE5VZT, is helping me track down the elusive article about the Varactor receiver. This is the Varactor receiver project that I've been trying to get a hold of. Mike Allen, VK3XL, is also helping in this effort. Mike has identified three articles from 73 magazine that I thought might be the articles that could have led me into my ill-fated and ultimately failed homebrew receiver project, from which you know, I am still, you know, technically traumatized. The first was the April 1976 issue of 73 magazine. There was an article in there called The Tuna 2 Traveler. I thought this might be it, but I should have been alerted by the word 2 in there, because, you know, during this period, Wayne Green in 73 magazine was deeply into 2 meters and 2 meter repeaters, and Bill KE5VZT sent me the article, tracked it down, and yeah, sure enough, it turned out to be a 2 meter article and not the the direct conversion varactor controlled receiver article that we're still searching for. Mike in Australia has spotted two other articles that he thinks might be likely suspects. One is April 1977, a Minicom receiver by K4DHC on page 136. And then the May 78 issue, which is a bit late. I don't think I was building this thing that late. I think at that point I was in college and far too deeply into collegiate social life to be building direct conversion receivers. You know what I'm talking about, guys. You know how it goes. But who knows? I might have had a slow spell there and got into a burst of technical activity. It happens. May 78, another article by K4DHC on another receiver project. Who knows? We'll try to find out. We'll get to the bottom of this. I want to find that article. I want to build that receiver. I want to make it work. And I want to redeem myself in the eyes of the radio gods here. This project's been hanging fire for a long time. Roberto, XE1GXG, down there in Guadalajara, Mexico, loved the book and sent me a real nice message, starting out in Spanish and then concluding in English. He wanted to convey the warm feelings that had been stirred up in him by the book, and he said that it's easier to convey that kind of warmth in Spanish or Italian, and he's right. English, I think, is better for kind of colder technical discussions. Those of you who know the languages know what I'm talking about. So for the kind of warm part of the message, he did it in Spanish, and then he concluded with English. But he really liked the book, and thanks very much for sending along those kind remarks. Roberto, glad you're enjoying the book down there in Guadalajara. Jorge Luis, KI4SGU, has also been going increasingly digital on us, and he has an interesting article up on his blog on how the various modes allow us to operate below the noise level. And it's sort of a signal-to-noise ratio challenge. Very interesting. I'm going to put a link to his article up on my blog, but those of you who are interested in it, and I think you should all take a look, just Google KI4SGU blogspot.com. That'll take you to Jorge Luis's excellent blog. Check out his signal-to-noise challenge. It's especially interesting for people who are interested in whisper, the Joe Taylor program that so many people are using for whisper. By the way, Joe Taylor, I'm reading in the latest issue of Discovery Magazine or Discover Magazine, which I really like. And there's an article in there by a lady astronomer named Jocelyn Bell. And towards the end of the article, I'm delighted to find that she's talking about her work on pulsars with her friend Joe Taylor. So Joe Taylor's name keeps popping up very appropriately, and always interesting to read about his work. Finally, we got a really nice message I want to share with you. We got a few minutes here. Let me pull over the other computer here. And this message is from Jack, K1VE. And he writes, he said, I received my copy of Solder Smoke from Lulu today, seemed like in record time, and I have a few comments about the book. First, I'm torn between thanking you and not thanking you. I get this a lot. I've just moved to this QTH in Iowa from Atlanta and was busily unpacking box number 52 of 120 moving boxes that comprise my ham workshop when the FedEx man rang the doorbell. Uh-oh. There was your book. I haven't put it down except for stopping to eat my meals. Hey, Jack, can't you read and eat? Come on. I really want to clear out all the boxes filling up my living room, but I know I won't resume unpacking until I finish the book. I love it. You've captured the essence of what it was like to discover ham radio and growing up with it. I started in 1952 at about the same age as you started, but was not as adventurous as you when it came to building. When I did try to build something, it was with great impatience, as you described. You know, this is what I point out in the book. You know, 13-year-old men, 13-year-old guys are not big on planning or preparation. No, they are men of action. I did start collecting parts for an 813 amp and got as far as getting the power supply done. Like you, I'm lucky I'm still alive. Yeah, I describe in the book how I built a power supply for a Heathkit HW32A at age 13 or 14. And looking back, man, it's a miracle that I'm sitting here talking to you today, guys, because, again, when you're 13 or 14, safety precautions, well, kind of makes those guys up in Maine flying the kite over the power line there look like really, really cautious dudes, because it's really amazing that I didn't toast myself down in the basement. It says here, let's see, what else? I'm not really a QRP kind of guy. Life is too short for that, as they say, but I do enjoy building QRP-like things, especially stuff that W7ZOI recommends for test equipment and other things from solid-state design for the radio amateur. I have no electronic background other than ham radio. Your tech descriptions in Solder Smoke have given me a clearer understanding of things I just take for granted. And a special thanks for explaining holes, H-O-L-E-S, holes, in regards to transistor theory. Years ago, I just tucked that in the back of my mind and tried to forget about it. Yeah, many of us did. Yeah, I mean, holes, yeah, a hole moving around inside the crystal. I would, and still do, see a transistor circuit, and I could make use of, dig out a few I would see a circuit that I could make use out of, dig out a few 2N22A's and go for it. Now I know I can still completely forget about the holes, but at least then I could explain the reasoning behind them if required. My EE friends could never adequately explain what was meant by holes. Solder Smoke the book did, though. Thanks and continue. Good luck and good DX 73 from Jack KV1E. Thanks for that. Really, really nice message, Jack. Really, really appreciate it. Glad you enjoy the book. And thanks for the stroll down memory lane. Glad you survived the power supply project. All right, guys, we're at the 51-minute and 55-second point here. Time for me to go get a refill on a cup of coffee. I hope everybody has a really nice Sunday. Good week ahead. See you during the next edition of Solder Smoke 73 from Rome.